Welcome back to the lab. Sources have been removed from this recording for compatibility with listening. Visit quantumdisciple.com to view the sources in detail. Audit, the integrity of the seal. Preface, the custody protocol. To the investigator of the empty tomb, the central event of the Christian faith, the resurrection of Jesus, rests on a physical anomaly. That anomaly is an empty tomb. For the skeptic, this is often dismissed as a security breach. One of the most persistent theories is that the Roman guards, the very agents of state authority, were the ones who opened the tomb. Skeptics suggest they did this either through negligence, bribery, or a clandestine order. This presentation is a systems audit of the custody protocol established at the tomb of Jesus of Nazareth. We are not here to speculate on feelings, vibes, or conspiracies. We are here to examine the source code, which is the scriptures, along with the historical logs. By looking at Roman military law and extra-biblical accounts, we can determine if the theory of Roman interference is logically defensible. Section 0.1, Security Specifications. We begin by auditing the security specifications recorded in the source code. Here is the explicit record. "Sir," they said, "we remember that while he was still alive, that deceiver said, 'After 3 days I will rise again.' So give the order for the tomb to be made secure until the third day. Otherwise, his disciples may come and steal the body and tell the people that he has been raised from the dead. This last deception will be worse than the first." "Take a guard," Pilate answered. "Go, make the tomb as secure as you know how." So they went and made the tomb secure by putting a seal on the stone and posting the guard. The logical inference here is clear. The phrase, "worse than the first," reveals that the Jewish leadership viewed a resurrection rumor as an existential threat to their credibility. They would not engineer the very scenario they were desperate to prevent. This preemptively closes the angle that the authorities stole the body. Furthermore, this security protocol was triggered by a direct prediction. It was a response to Jesus' own public claim. "Destroy this temple, and I will raise it again in 3 days." The authorities took this prediction seriously enough to request Roman military intervention. This serves as an ironic validation of the claim they sought to suppress. Section 0.2, The Guard Identity. Here is an explicit data point. Pilate's command, "Take a guard," utilizes the Greek word custodia. This is a term derived from the Roman word for a military guard detachment. The jurisdiction logic strongly suggests these soldiers were operating under Roman military authority, especially given their recorded fear of the Roman governor, Pilate. The legal firewall, which is the seal. In Roman practice, a physical seal known as a sphragis signified imperial authority. Breaking a Roman seal without authorization was considered an act of treason against the emperor himself. Section 1.0, The Motive Audit. Was it an inside job? To the investigator, before auditing the physical hardware, we must audit the intent. An inside job requires a motive for the authorities, whether Roman or Jewish, to remove the body. Section 1.1, The Executive Posture. The goal for the Romans was closure. The historical log reveals that even within Pilate's own household, his wife received a warning to disengage. She sent a message saying, "Don't have anything to do with that innocent man." The logical inference is that removing the body would be a completely self-defeating act for Rome. The most secure state for the Roman executive branch was a body remaining safely inside a sealed tomb. Section 1.2, The Religious Posture. The goal for the religious leaders was containment. Logically, if the Jewish leaders possessed the body, they could have produced it at any time to permanently crush the new movement. The fact that they later paid hush money to the guards proves they did not have possession of the body. Section 1.3, Hostile Witness Conversion and Motive Inversion. A skeptic might ask about hostile witnesses who later converted. Consider the record of James. Explicit data shows that Jesus' own brothers did not believe in him during his earthly ministry. Yet the first century historian Josephus records that James, the brother of Jesus, was eventually martyred for his faith. Early writings also note the risen Jesus appeared directly to James. Then we have the record of Paul. Paul was a vicious persecutor of the early church. He underwent a complete system-state inversion after an encounter with the risen Christ. The logic here is unavoidable. These individuals had every motive to suppress the resurrection claim. A hallucination theory completely fails to explain why hostile family members and active persecutors would willingly die for a claim they initially rejected. Section 2.0, The Hardware Audit, The Stone and the Seal. To the investigator, the outside job theory, which claims the disciples stole the body, must overcome two formidable firewalls. The first is the physical barrier, the stone. The second is the legal barrier, the seal. Section 2.1, The Physical Firewall. Let's consider the acoustic signature of the stone. Moving a 1 to 2 ton rock is not a stealth operation. The grinding and vibration are entirely incompatible with a covert extraction, especially under a death penalty security protocol. Section 2.2, The Legal Firewall. The logic regarding the seal is simple. The Roman seal verified the body was actually inside before the guard was set in place. You simply do not put a state seal on an empty container. Section 2.3, The No Burial Theory. This theory fails. Some skeptics argue Jesus was thrown into a mass grave according to Roman custom. However, explicit data points show Joseph of Arimathea placed the body in his own, new, nearby tomb. Logically, if Jesus were in a mass grave, the authorities would not have bothered to seal a specific tomb and post a dedicated guard. The entire security protocol presupposes a known, specific burial location. Section 2.4, The Wrong Tomb Theory. This theory also fails. The body was placed in a new tomb in which no one had yet been laid. A brand new, unused tomb eliminates the idea of going to the wrong location or confusing Jesus with another body. There was only one possible occupant. Section 3.0, The Override, a System Bypass. To the investigator, the system logs do not record a slow human breach. Instead, they record a sudden system override. Section 3.1, Angelic Intervention. The explicit data point reads, "There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven, and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men." Additionally, we have the centurion's log. Even the Roman officer at the cross confessed, "Surely he was the Son of God." This adds a hostile witness to the supernatural phenomena surrounding the event. The logical inference is that this override accounts for both the incapacitated guards and the moved stone, all without requiring any motive for the soldiers to abandon their post. Section 3.2, The Swoon Theory. This is the idea that Jesus did not actually die. This patch fails. It is decisively closed by the medical logs. The data shows a soldier pierced Jesus' side, bringing a flow of blood and water. Furthermore, Pilate did not release the body until he personally verified the death with his commanding officer. The text says, "Summoning the centurion, he asked him if Jesus had already died." The medical logic is consistent with pericardial effusion, which is a physiological indicator of death. Professional Roman executioners confirmed the kill. A half-dead, severely wounded man could not wake up, roll away a 2-ton stone from the inside, and overpower trained military guards. Section 4.0, The Witness Audit, Authentication Protocols. To the investigator, if this narrative were a fabrication, the authentication protocols would have been perfectly optimized for first-century credibility. Instead, what we find is a raw log. It includes embarrassing and inconvenient details. Section 4.1, The First Responders. In first-century Judean culture, female testimony was legally disfavored. Making women the primary foundational witnesses is a marketing bug. It is a detail that only makes sense if the account is historically accurate. Section 4.2, The Thomas Protocol. Thomas demanded empirical tactile verification. His explicit demand was, "Unless I see the nail marks, I will not believe." He eventually received that physical proof and confessed, "My Lord and my God." Thomas was a skeptic who demanded empirical proof, and he got it. Section 4.3, The Dismissal Log. The data points show the male disciples initially dismissed the women's report as nonsense. The logical inference here is vital. The disciples were not credulous, gullible believers primed and ready for a resurrection. This initial disbelief is yet another embarrassing detail a fabricator would have scrubbed from the record. Section 4.4, The Emmaus Protocol. The disciples walking on the road to Emmaus were kept from recognizing him until their eyes were finally opened. This directly counters the wishful thinking or grief hallucination theory. Recognition came only after extended physical interaction, not an immediate psychological projection. Section 5.0, The Final Audit. Assessing the system status. Section 5.1, The Elimination of Alternative Exploits. The inside job fails. There is zero motive. The authorities desperately wanted the body contained. The outside job fails. The disciples lacked the capability and were hiding in fear behind locked doors. The hallucination theory fails. It cannot explain the physical hardware changes, like the empty tomb, nor can it account for simultaneous group interactions with a physical body. Section 5.2, The Martyrdom Logic. Historical records confirm the apostles suffered immensely for their testimony. The fundamental logic is this: people will die for beliefs they hold to be true, but they will not voluntarily die for claims they know firsthand to be false. Their willingness to face torture and death without recanting is powerful evidence of a genuine encounter. Section 5.3, The Witness Trilemma. Logically, the disciples fall into one of three categories. Option 1, they were liars, they knew it was false and died for a lie anyway. This is psychologically implausible. Option 2, they were lunatics, they were delusional. However, this fails to explain the empty tomb or the extended group interactions. Option 3, they were truth-tellers, they genuinely encountered the risen Christ. The first two options utterly fail the audit. The third option remains the only logically sound conclusion. Section 5.4, Final Verdict. The audit status is verified. The system status is live. Thank you for listening. Please like and subscribe, and visit quantumdisciple.com for more Christian research.